Did a whole thing about this.
Okay, we're here. Welcome back, everyone.
Yeah.
And we are, I don't even remember what class this is in our Shabbat series. So I remember we did one, and then we did two. No. Then Rabbi Pinney did three. Then last week I did four. This is five, man. This is five. Am I wrong?
I think this is
one, two.
Five.
Yeah, this is five, because I did two, Penny did one, and then last week I did another one, this is five. Okay, cool. So we're good. So what I want to do is actually just spend a few minutes, little reviewing from last week, reviewing the overall 39. Penny, want to do me a favor, just close that door next to you, man. Thank you so much. Guys, before we start, just because we never have Vinny in the room, I just want to thank the gentlemen crouching in the back, fixing one of our things. Vinny, just raise your hand. Tell everyone you're here.
Nice.
Vinny does. You have no idea what he does, actually. We just signed a lease, even though the school has been here for many months without one. But we finally signed a lease for the next 3 years with a Jewish school that rents subleases from us here at MGE. So Vinny comes here how many times a week?
Four
times a week? And changes the school into MJE. So if you were here just a few hours ago, the place would look a little more like Romper Room. And now it looks like an adult version of Romper Room.
It's like a Rangers.
It's not that shit. It's not
Rangers
that
shit. The Knicks game. It's like,
yeah,
right.
Change the floor, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not so easy. Yeah. It's not so easy. And there's a lot of moving and schlepping and a lot of storing of a lot of school stuff and our stuff and other floors of the building. There's one elevator. It's not so simple. And Vinny does a great job. I just want to thank you for that, Vinny.
Thank you, Vinny.
Here, please. If you want to come join, come sit, please. So last week we spoke about melacha, the concept of melacha, which is much broader, bigger, and more significant than simply the physical exertion of energy. We know it's not simply the physical exertion of energy, because if it was, then the flick of the wrist to turn a light on or off wouldn't be melacha. And what I do sometimes on Shabbat, which is moving people in my house, moving out, and setting up another chair, and da-da-da, and hanging out with people, and I'm exhausted, you know, by the time Shabbat is over, maybe I am violating Shabbat because, you know, I just exerted a lot of energy. What is it? What is it that we're refraining from doing once a week on Shabbat when the Torah says not to do work? It's not simply exerting ourselves. It's clearly not what it is. It's
not building synagogues.
It's not building synagogues.
Yeah, it's building up the tabernacle.
Okay, it's not building a tabernacle. Okay, but what does that really mean today? Because last time I checked, I didn't see anybody here building a tabernacle. What is it? But we're not building a tabernacle. What was the tabernacle? What were those activities that went into the building of the tabernacle? What's the common denominator, we said?
Creation.
Let's get more specific than that even. Good.
Manipulation.
They're creative activities. Good. Whereby we are manipulating. This is good. Everybody's contributing.
We're putting ourselves above nature. So it's manipulating
Either within the natural world or removing it from the natural world so that it is suitable for human use. Why do we want to do that? Welcome in the back. What's your name? What's it?
Uri.
Welcome. Would you like a handout? Bakasha. You move up your seat, please. Don't. Nice to see you. So we're doing that because why? Why are we doing that? Why are we playing around with the natural world so much? What are we're supposed to do that? Let's leave the world where it is, and we'll be where we are. And we'll just live in a cave, like our ancestors did.
Man cave.
We'll live in a man cave.
Part of the purpose of creation is
the purpose of creation was what did God say to Adam? Besides being fruitful and multiply. Is that the only thing you can think of?
Just kidding. Yes.
When I was working on ambulances in Israel, the supervisor come the weekends when he didn't want us to work more shifts, he'd go, poo revu.
That's funny. Okay. So, but what else did God tell Adam besides being fruitful and multiply? You said, come on, we did it last week.
Take your rib to make Eve. Sorry.
Right, Eve came out of his rib. That's all true.
Don't eat from the tree.
He told him not to eat from the tree. These are all true things. They have absolutely nothing to do with what we discussed here.
Something.
Yeah, one word. What's that?
We're above animals.
We're supposed to not simply we're above because we're better. We're supposed to use the world, conquer the forces of nature. He didn't say these words. He actually said it in one word. Vikiv shuha. Lichvosh means to conquer, to prevail over. But it's not to show your dominance simply for the sake of dominance. Why are we prevailing over the natural world? For what purpose? To what end? Why is that a good thing? Why does God want us to conquer the physical natural world? He wants us to do that in order to?
To help ourselves, no?
To help us what?
Grow, become independent,
perfect the world.
Perfect the world, thank you. To perfect the world. We were created in an imperfect world with the mission and purpose of perfecting it. And how do you do that? You got to manipulate the world. Now, we don't create in the same way God creates. God creates ex nihilo, fancy Latin term for yesh ma'ayin, which is Hebrew for?
From nothing.
From nothing. We just take pre-existing matter and we manipulate it to make great things, to build hospitals, create cures, build an economy. Whatever it is that we're doing all week long, that's a good thing. We're supposed to do that. Sheish yamim ta'avod, the Torah says, 6 days you shall work. Vasita kol melachtecha. I don't know how many of you guys feel productive when you're at work.
Depends.
It depends. Okay. But here's the deal. If you are contributing in some way to society, you are trying to build a better world. God wants us to do that. We're supposed to be His partners in creation. What's the danger that we discussed last week in only doing that?
You might start to think you're above Him, you're
right,
better than Him.
Then we start considering ourselves God.
Yep.
Yeah, and yeah.
I had a question about this, though, last week. I just remembered it. So we rest on the Sabbath so that we acknowledge that we're not above God, we're not better than God, but we rest on the same day and for the same amount of time that He did. So
yes,
we're not better than Him, but we're gonna take a break. But we're gonna take the same break He did,
right?
And on the same day too. It's like,
right.
Shouldn't we take 2 days then to be less than God? I mean, we're like, we're not gonna be better, but we're gonna match.
So I don't know if this is a time thing. I don't really know why. I don't know if I can explain metaphysically or physically even why one day. It's 1 day out of the week, but for whatever reason, I don't pretend to know the answer to all these questions. The Torah says that we're, you know, this is what God did. He created in 6 days and He rested on the seventh. And we are supposed to try to emulate God, be like God, in the sense that we are trying to perfect an imperfect world and ourselves, who are imperfect. And then one day we pull back. And we're pulling back that 1 day of the week to make sure that we don't imagine ourselves as God, that we don't need God, we can keep the world. And one day we pull back and we refrain specifically from what? We don't simply do nothing. We specifically refrain from creative activities. And that's what the 39 activities that went into the building of the tabernacle. They're all physical activities whereby we manipulate the physical world in some kind of way to affect change. And we're going to see that tonight. They all have to affect some kind of change. I mentioned last week that the common denominator of all these 39 activities is that we affect some kind of change through our physical manipulation of the creative of the world, except for one activity. Who remembers last week? One activity of the 39 activities was carrying. Carrying doesn't really change anything. I take the hat and I, instead of putting it on my head to keep myself warm, which would not be carrying, I put it in my pocket. Now it is carrying. Now, it looks the same when I get to the place I wanted to go than it did when I put it in my pocket. So what change have I effected? So what did we say last week? Rabbi Diane Grunfeld suggested that what does carrying have to do with anything? Why is carrying one of the prohibited activities? We're not really manipulating anything or changing anything in any kind of material way. We're just moving it from one domain to the next. See, I didn't give homework this week. This is what happens when you don't give homework.
Why didn't you? We were talking.
I forgot. You know why? Because I couldn't. I brought the tape recorder home and I didn't leave it here. See, you need a system for everything. If I leave it here, Vinny gives it to Deb. Deb puts it down and she says, send your homework with the tape. I didn't do that, so you didn't get homework. Now you don't remember anything I said and I have to spend 10 minutes reviewing. Okay, so what's the carrying? Special significance of carrying?
It has to do with the social order.
Social order of things. Keep going.
Well, in that moving it from one dominion to another dominion is to try to re-engage in the sort of social order or policy that we also do. as humans.
Good.
It's a
good
manipulation.
Right. If the other malachot show us man mastering and controlling his natural environment, you don't have it there. This one shows us active in the social realm, carrying on the intercourse of the community, circulating its material between house and house, which is why, by the way, it's only forbidden to carry where?
Outside
in the public domain, or from a private domain to a public domain. Can you carry inside your home on Shabbat?
Yes.
Yes, you can. This works perfectly. By the way, this is just a theory I'm giving you. The Torah doesn't give this what I'm sharing with you. I got this from Diane Grudfeld, who got this from Rav Hirsch, who got this from his brilliance, from studying all of these different things, and I'm just sharing a theory as to what is behind melacha, what are we prohibited from doing on Shabbat. All the Torah tells us is don't do melacha. Don't do these activities, and we know that there are 39 activities. So again, if the other malachot show us mastering and controlling the natural world, this one, carrying, shows us active in the social realm, carrying on the intercourse of the community, circulating its material goods between house and house, through street and thoroughfare, not for trade only, but also for the personal and social everyday ends of everyday life. Carrying is the characteristic malacha by which man pursues and attains his purpose in society. By ceasing from the other 38, we proclaim God as the source of our power over nature. And by ceasing from our carrying, we acknowledge God as our master in the sphere of human society.
So something that I don't understand is, like, if you want to talk about, like, picking up my dry cleaning on Shabbos, like,
right.
I can understand that as being a violation of a melachot. But I don't understand about the, like, the hat in a pocket.
Right.
Thing. Like, I'm worried I might be colder.
Because it's the activity. It's not what you're doing the activity for. If you start getting into what you're doing the activity for, which I understand, it would more correspond to the theory I'm suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, but then you get out of the whole legal category. Judaism is all about legal categories. So even if you are doing something for some other end, and it's not really to move something functional from one place to the next, you know, and it's not really the intercourse of society. It's just putting the hat in my pocket.
Right.
As long as you're engaging in the activity, you're still breaking the law. Because the law is about the activity, not the degree to which the activity is being directed, always.
Okay.
Now, sometimes what's called, anybody know what that Hebrew word is? When it matters what your motivation is?
Kavanah.
It's a very good word. Mindfulness, focus. We use that in prayer a lot. Did you go to MJ on Shabbos for services? Yeah, I was there. But did you have kavana? What's kavana or kavanah? Were you focused? Were you present? Were you mindful? We're in a lot of places. We're here right now, right? We're in this room. We're having this conversation. But are we here? Are we present? So there's no question that kavana factors in. But like, if I'm just putting it in my pocket because I don't feel like sticking it over my head, it's got a little warmer out. I just want to carry it. I'm not really moving, I'm not really engaging in the intercourse of society, but I'm still partaking of the activity.
Well, you said carrying from the private domain to the public. If I'm wearing my hat when I'm inside,
right.
I'm not carrying it.
Correct.
I then step outside, I'm now in the public
domain. It's fine, because you're wearing it.
Right, but if I take it off, I'm only carrying it in the public domain.
That's
I'm not carrying it in the private domain.
Correct. No,
so
it's only prohibited in the public domain, or from the private to the public, or public to private.
So public in general, it's a problem.
Correct.
Or carrying it from one to another.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I have a question. So, like, in New York City, like, when I grew up in those, like, big apartment buildings in Brooklyn, and then you play in the hallway.
Yeah.
That's technically carrying. Because
so, that's a whole discussion as to what the common area of our building is. And do we need to... It's really more similar to what's called a chatzer, which is a courtyard. And it might be something in between a private and a public domain. There is a third domain, but I'm not going to get... You know, you're not here to study the Tractate of Erevin. I could spend all year just talking to you about Erevs and public and private, this thing called Carmelite. It's not Rishut HaYachid, it's not a private domain, it's not a Rishut HaRabim, it's not a public domain, there's something in between called a Carmelite. That might be your common area. Some say a Carmelite doesn't need it, it's rabbinically, it's not a biblical public domain, it's a rabbinic one, but what we usually do is we do what's called an Erev Chatzerot, whereby we would join everyone in the building and convert the public area of the building into everyone's private area by having a box of matzah and an egg, because it's supposed to be a meal, And that's matzah. It's just easier than carrying bread around. And an egg is something cooked. And we'll talk about that another time. I don't want to get you, I'm trying to give you a broad overview, and what I want to do is I want to drill down into a different malacha that's much more practical, which is cooking. I'm going to get to it. Any other questions about...
Let's go a little further into this.
Do we have to?
Just like 5 minutes.
A little bit. We need a slight aside. Yes, it was kind of
interesting. Is it a space between spaces?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what does having a meal in it do? Does it convert it into...
No, it's a question as to whether if everyone in the building who kind of owns jointly the common area can somehow fuse it together legally, then you can carry in that common area. So we generally do that. Like if we go to a hotel, can you carry in the hotel? The only part that you're really paying for, that's your really private domain, is your own little room. Mm-hmm. What if you're in the dining room? So we generally rule that it's considered one big private domain, as long as it's not physically outside. But some say, well, maybe it's not, because it's not really yours, it's not really private, it's a public area. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it might require that ritual in order to... It's not really a ritual, it's a legal way of actually fusing the neighborhood,
if you will. Literally just like put a box of matzah...
And one person can do it for the whole community, actually.
Really? So are we going to leave this sheet behind in a second and move on to cooking? Because I've got one question about
that. No. So I actually gave you this one sheet, not to run through it, this is for your library, because you are all developing your own Jewish libraries. This is a great sheet I got from one of my teachers and mentors, Rabbi Alan Schwartz. He's a rabbi of Ohev Tzedek. I was his assistant rabbi for 2 years. And when he used to teach, he had this. It's really good. It just shows you, because a lot of people say, where do these 39 activities come from? So Josh, you said this before. It's about building a synagogue. It's the tabernacle. These, just take a look. Follow with me. It says the 13 Avot Melachot. The following is a list of the 39 Avot Melachot, which are prohibited on Shabbat. They are found in the Mishnah, which is the oral tradition you're all experts on because you sat through from Sinai to Manhattan. In the tractate of Shabbat, we group them according to their function in the tabernacle. Everybody knows what the tabernacle was again? Mobile sanctuary that the Jewish people carried around with them wherever they went in the wilderness before there was a permanent temple in Jerusalem.
First mitzvah tank.
It was the first mitzvah tank. Yeah. They actually, but they had different parts to it.
Yeah.
You know, the menorah was in there, the altar was in there, the Ark of the Covenant was in there, and they would carry it around on poles, and then when they got to an encampment, they would take the poles out, and they would build it and perform all the... It was a mobile sanctuary. The activities that went into building that, taking it apart, putting it back together, are what is prohibited on Shabbat. Those are the definition for creative activity. So the first 11 malachot were performed either for the manufacturing of dyes, D-Y-E-S. Why do they need dyes? I should have brought my tabernacle book in. You could see they redid these things so you could actually physically see them. They had curtains hanging in the tabernacle, and they were dyed in beautiful tapestries. And in order to actually make the dyes, you'd have to go through these 11 activities. Or for the making of the loaves. You remember last week we said that somebody was sitting around here said
Lesson,
this.
Pop the name.
It was you. You were making me so confused. He's everywhere. He's like omnipotent. So
how was the Mishkan moving though? Like I'm just surprised that like there'll be tired.
My questions
like,
are more 32 and 33.
Sewing,
the writing
like
one.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. I don't know how often.
Like
actually, it's not so hard. You can look it up.
Yeah.
Open up the five books of Moses and look at all the sojourns, and it says they went from here to here and they stopped here and they went from there to there and they stopped here. There's one Parshat Mas'e, which means travelings.
Uh-huh.
It's in the end of the book of Deuteronomy. It actually mentions all the encampments. There were about 30 to 40 encampments. How many? 42 different pit stops they made in the wilderness. The next 13 malachot are related to the manufacturing of wool. Why did they need wool in the tabernacle? The first five were in the processing of the wool, because what do you think they were dyeing? They were dyeing wool for the tapestries. The tapestries were not just for art. They actually separated the different parts of the tabernacle from each other. There was the holy part, the holy of holies, all these different parts. And that's shearing, bleaching, combing raw material, dyeing, spinning, tying and not untying, sewing and tearing. The next seven were for the processing of the animal hides. Why would they need animal hides? the skin of an animal, because that actually covered the Mishkan. And that you needed to trap the animal, slaughter the animal, skin the animal, tan, ruling lines, scraping hides, cutting to size or shape. And then 32-33, you were asking about this, yeah. Jesse. What were they writing and erasing? What do you think? Take
I'm
a guess.
I'm imagining like IKEA. Like this is piece A, this yes. is piece A, this is the dowel between yeah. piece A.
So and if you had a little thing where this had to be screwed into this, there'd be a little over here. I do this for my sukkah
every
year.
I thought I was
year.
Reading that wrong. I was like, there's no way that's actually what it
was. But, yeah, but that's with it. Yeah. And they would like, remove it, and then they would put it back. So that's how writing and erasing. The next two malachas were also involved, building and demolishing, and then extinguishing and lighting a fire. What I want to do with you guys now, with your permission, do I have your permission? Okay. Why would you give me permission? I don't even know what, you asked the right question. I want to discuss one area that is very practical, because I want to bring this alive. Now, you wanted me to bring it alive through Erevs, which I respect. Okay, I just don't know that much about it, and I don't think it's as practical. I'll tell you why it's not as practical. Because either you live in a neighborhood with an Arab and you carry, or you don't, and then you don't. But here's the cooking thing. Everybody wants hot food on Shabbos. Who doesn't want to eat hot food on Shabbos? This organization has been built on the back of hot food on Shabbos. Friday night dinner, Kiddush. What would MJ be? What would the Jewish people be like? Where would we be if we didn't have cholent and kugel that was hot? And there's nothing more yuch than eating cold kugel.
Karaites.
What's the organization you guys have? Kugel. Right? You should say hot kugel.
It's not catchy.
It's not catchy. Okay, so... Okay, so... So here's what I want to run through. So now, the reason I like teaching this is not only because it's practical, because if you know the rules and laws... You can have hot food on Shabbos without actually cooking. Now, why don't we cook? What activity was that? Who was cooking in the tabernacle? Remember? What activity was it? Look at your other sheet.
Baking.
It was where? It was baking. It was number 11. Baking is cooking in regard to bread. And if you don't believe it was, it could be, what's the other theory? Dyes. D-Y-E-S. The activity of cooking. It's actually the activity. It doesn't even have to be used for cooking. It's the very activity of rendering something raw and making it edible, or changing it from state A to state B, that what? That actually could create the dyes. It's actually the same activity. And therefore, it sounds like a weird thing to call it cooking, but one of the reasons that we don't cook is because they were making dyes. Now, do you eat the dye? No, I don't suggest you drink or eat those dyes. They're probably poisonous or not good for you. But it's the activity that we're disengaging in. Now, the reason I like this also, and then no more prefaces, we're going to jump into it, spend the next 20 minutes cooking, and that is, you've got a biblical component to this and a rabbinic component. Now, what does it matter if there's a biblical component, rabbinic component? What's the difference?
Rabbinical can change if we ever get the Sanhedrin back.
The rabbinic can change, yeah. I mean. If we ever had a Sanhedrin, they might, you know...
I'm just saying in general.
No backsies, you know, yeah. No backsies. Why does it matter? You really want to understand. You're in the next level here. You're in the fellowship. You want to understand the structure of the halachic system. You don't want to be just like, on Shabbos you can't cook. No. What that means is the following. Can't do this, da-da-da, ba-ba-ba. And why it also matters, because if something is forbidden on a biblical level, you got very little leeway, very little, you know, unless it's a life-threatening situation or potential of life-threatening situation. But if it's rabbinic, that doesn't mean we ignore it or don't take it seriously. But if there's another Jewish value that hits up against it, then you could start analyzing it from a legal perspective. What's more important? My son said today, he wanted to daven. He said, how important is it for me to daven mincha in a minyan? He wanted to praise three times a day, and he usually goes to a minyan. So I said, why? He says, I was with my father, and my dad was going home to his apartment, and he was leaving the office. My son is interning now at Wiles and Weinberg for the week, and so he's like, do I go with my Zaidi, who can take the bus himself, but he's a little older, and be nice to have an escort, or do I go down, and I can daven mincha on my own, or do I go with a minyan? A minyan is better than with a mincha with a minyan. It's a good question. So, you know, it was a pretty easy one, I think. I think you go with the Zaidi. I think you go with your grandfather. Because honoring and showing respect for elders, and certainly for grandparent, is biblical, and davening with a minyan is rabbinic. Pretty simple, straightforward. There are other things a little more complicated, like when you have two rabbinics hitting up against each other. How do you know which one's more significant? Or a biblical where you don't have to and it's a little different. So anyway, it does matter. Okay, and we're going to get into that. What does it mean to cook on Shabbos? And I just want to show you some sources. The Mishnah, which is the part of the Talmud that lays down the rules, gives us the 39 melachot, and it gives us baking. And what is the definition? So Maimonides writes, the great Rambam, look at source number 2, that a person who places an egg next to a kettle so that it should become slightly cooked is liable. When we say liable, that means he's cooked. He's guilty, if you will, of cooking on Shabbat if he puts an egg next to a hot kettle. Because what happens when you put the raw egg next to the hot kettle? It cooks the egg. Similarly, a person who washes aged salted fish, or sole. What's sole or aged salted fish? They're very thin types of fishes that get easily and quickly cooked. They don't take a long, you don't have to put it on the skillet for too long. Right? A very thin, soft fish, if you put it in hot water. Let's say there was hot water. You didn't boil the hot water on Shabbat because you wouldn't do that. You're not cooking. But I got some fish and I just want to heat it up a little. But it's raw fish. And I'm not a sushi guy. I'm not interested in the raw fish thing right now. I want some cooked fish. But I'm not like turning on a stove or anything like that. There's just some really hot water there. I'll just take the thin fish and I'll drop it into the bowl of hot water. It's actually considered cooking. Why? Because cooking is all about what you're cooking. So if it was a very thick piece of meat that could take an hour to cook on a big flame, probably wouldn't be cooking, because you took a raw piece of meat and dropped in that hot water, it's not doing anything. You need to put that sucker in an oven for an hour. You know what I mean? But a thin piece of fish, yeah. So this melacha is very subtle and it's quite relative, which means it depends what you're cooking.
What if you cure it with acid or lemon juice?
I was going to say
lime juice.
So that's not cooking. It's not cooking because curing, that's a very good question. Yeah. I don't think that's cooking because you need to bring something to an edible state, and that just maybe increases the characteristic of edibility.
Yeah.
But it's not really technically cooking, although cooking... The definition I spent many years ago learning some of this material, actually with Rabbi Pinney in Yeshiva, and we came up with an interesting working definition, which is cooking, and I'm trying to get it from it. Let me do a little more, and I'll come back to your curing. Yeah. So, and a similarly, a person washes aged salt fish or sole, very thin, in hot water. Washing them with hot water completes the cooking process, and the same principle applies in other situations. And look at the next halacha of the Rambam, Maimonides. When one person makes a fire, another dude puts a piece of wood on the fire. Third guy comes along and sticks a pot on the wood on the fire. A fourth guy adds water. Another one puts a piece of meat in the pot, in the water,
it's murder on
the wood. Right, exactly. Another put in spices. Another stirred it. Now, who is liable for cooking? Which one of these people are guilty of the crime?
I'll be guilty?
They're all liable for cooking. Why? Because anyone who performs any activity that's necessary for cooking is considered as having performed the forbidden labor. If by contrast, look at this, you put down the pot, and another guy came water, and another guy came and added the meat, and another came guy and added spices, and another one put fire, and another came, it is only the latter two. Who are the only two dudes that are liable for this? The fire and the stirrer. Everything else before, because they didn't do anything actually. All they did was dump a bunch of things, unless they didn't have an eruv and they carried it outside, you know. Then they didn't do anything wrong, and they certainly didn't cook. The only ones who made it cooked was the dude who lit a fire and the one who stirred it. Whereas in the first,
because they made a fire.
What's that? Okay, then the Talmud speaks about this. So they're not only liable for cooking; they're also liable for creating a flame. Good. What else?
It might be carrying.
What's that?
Carrying
also. It's very easy. Let me just tell you something. Shabbat observance is the easiest thing to mess up on. You could violate multiple prohibitions without even knowing it.
What if your intent though wasn't to start the cooking? You bring fire for heat. Someone else decides to put a pot on it and start cooking.
Doesn't matter.
You're still liable.
Yeah, because even though you were doing it for heat.
Wasn't there. Just
mindfulness. Yeah, your mindfulness was to engage in that activity. That's your mindfulness. Okay. It's not about I'm looking to cook. It's about engaging in these activities.
What about making a grilled cheese on a blech? I knew this happened when I was back.
Did yours get hot enough?
Huh? I had someone in college who like made a grilled cheese on a blech.
Are you kidding? My son, who's in Israel, he went a few weeks ago. It's an electric hot plate. We're going to get into it. So my son is in this yeshiva in Israel. The food is awful. And in their suites, they're all cooking. And there's toaster ovens, and there's hot plates, and there's all this electric oven. It's the most dangerous place in the world. And they're making grilled cheeses all the time. So that's cooking, man, because you take the cheese, you melt it into the bread, and you are changing its form. And now it was edible already, but what if I took a carrot? And I like my carrot soft.
Yeah.
That's cooking also. It's the definition basically is rendering something raw edible or increasing the characteristic of edibility via heat. It must involve heat. When Mishra gets back, somebody will tell him that's why curing and all these things, there's no heat involved, it's not cooking.
So making like ceviche on Shabbat is completely okay.
Even I'm really embarrassed. I have no idea what that means.
They take like raw fish, which is edible normally, like with stuff like that, and they add like lemon juice, and it cures it, so it's like texturally it's a little tighter, but like it's not heat, but it's chemically
changing
it.
You need heat.
Ice pops. It's okay.
Ice pops, good. Good point. My kids did ice pops, and they asked me that question on Shabbat.
Ice cream.
As long as there's only one issue, and there's a rabbinic issue of what's called hachana, of preparing, you just want to make sure it gets done on Shabbos, for Shabbos. Because if you put it in, and you're doing it for Saturday night, remember the slap in the wrist, you're on a date, and you text somebody else? That's called hachana. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. The rabbis basically forbade that, because they want us to be in Shabbat.
So you gotta eat them all.
You gotta eat those on Shabbos. Or if you put it in before Shabbat, for Shabbos, that's fine too. But it's not cooking. If there's no heat, it's not cooking. Good question. So take a look at the definition. So the definition is rendering a raw item edible via heat on Shabbat, and B, engaging in any activity which increases the characteristic of edibility. Now, hold on a second. So why do we have these... So hold on a second. What about something that was cooked before Shabbos? And I want to heat it up on Shabbos.
Misha, you're good, by the way, he said. It's like curing it?
Yeah, curing it is not a problem. It needs to involve heat.
Completely okay.
It needs to involve heat.
Yeah.
Shabbos ceviche?
As long as you don't use...
So this comes up quite often. What comes up quite often is the issue of, I'll take a piece of chicken, I cooked it before Shabbat, and I want to heat it up on Shabbos. Is heating up a problem? Or is cooking? What did we say the definition was?
Cooking.
Definition was what? Look at the definition, guys.
Rendering
a raw item edible via heat. Engaging activity which increases the characteristic of edibility.
If it's already cooked.
It's already cooked.
It's already fully cooked.
Except, hold on a minute. What about...
Making your carrot softer might be a problem.
What about chicken soup, which cooled down, and you put it in the refrigerator, I want to heat that up.
Hot liquid's the next different, day. Right?
Isn't Why can't it? I do that?
Because you can't heat the liquid up on Shabbat.
How come I can heat my chicken up, but I can't heat my liquid up?
I'm going to be cooking something inside.
Keep going. Keep going. You're doing well.
I only know that as long as it's not cooled down a lot, you can add it back to the pot.
Good. As long as it isn't fully cooled.
It doesn't fully cool.
Right, but once it's cooled down, you put it in the fridge and it's cold. You can't reheat it up, but your cold chicken, which you cooked before Shabbat, you can take that out, and you can heat it up in a certain kind of way, which I'll get to in a minute. But what's the difference?
Evaporation.
There is evaporation with liquids, and there is no evaporation with chicken. That's true. I'm sure there's some form of evaporation or something.
Boiling the soup and cooking things in the soup.
Okay, good. Because what's the difference between cooking a solid versus a liquid, guys? Think about it.
You're trying to cook something else.
No.
They correlate with different metaphysical states of being.
Correct? This is not metaphysics.
What are you doing?
This is not metaphysics. What's the difference between... Here's what's interesting. What happens when I cook a piece of chicken? I cook it, and then it cools down. What happens to it when it cools down?
Yeah, it's staying as...
Stays exactly the same, just cold.
That's why you have to cook
the cheese. Right. I'm going to get to this. Good. What happens when you boil water, and then it cools down, and you reboil it? What is boiling water called halachically? It's not that complicated. It's on your. It's called cooking.
Oh.
Okay. Okay.
It's a few things here.
What is boiling water? So if it cools down and you boil it again, you've just done the same thing you did before. It's no different. It's not. It's not like it retained any of its new qualities after having been cooked, as opposed to or in contradiction, contradistinction to chicken. Chicken, once you cook it, it's cooked. It retains its new cooked status, its new changed cooked status once, even while it cools down. And therefore, reheating it is simply just that. Reheating it. It's not cooking it. Whereas reheating a liquid which had previously boiled or been cooked is what? Cooking. It's no different than what you did the first time. And that's why there's a concept of ein bishul achar bishul. There's no cooking after cooking. Like you can't kill somebody twice. You can't take a corpse and kill him again. He's already dead. I like using that example. I feel like that's a really friendly way of saying it. All right, somebody's dead. You can't be liable for murdering the same person twice. Once you murder him, he's done. He's finished. You can keep doing things to him, but you're not murdering him again. But when it comes to liquids, it's different. So we hold ein bishul achar bishul. There's no cooking after cooking when it comes to a davar yavesh, when it comes to a dry item like a piece of chicken or kugel. But when it comes to a liquid, there is yesh bishul. You're going to get it all semester for this. Yesh bishul achar bishul. There is cooking. There is cooking after cooking by davar lach, by liquids, which is why in a traditional Jewish home, you probably will never see chicken soup for lunch on Shabbos. But you'll always see it Friday night. Why? Because we haven't figured out technologically a way of keeping that chicken soup hot all thing, unless you're going to leave it in the crock pot or leave it in the thing
and not evaporating out.
And not evaporating, or like
you can't add any more.
You can't add any more. Every time you add a little more water,
you're cooking.
You're boiling it. You're cooking it, and that's why
there's cryovac machines that kind of keep.
Like an immersion circulator with a bag.
That'd be tricky.
I'm not saying it can't be done. Yeah. I'm just saying it's usually not typical. To see chicken soup, because no one wants to eat cold chicken soup, and a Friday night is easy. Now, I want to get rabbinic with you for a minute. Everybody following what I'm saying so far? Any questions about what I've said so far? Nothing
related, I swear. So, like salads, because it's about creating. Like, you're looking at me.
Go ahead.
No, because if you take ingredient, I don't know, like an avocado, a tomato, whatever, you're creating. You're taking three things.
Not a problem.
Chopping it up. I was told you can't. It's creating.
It's not creating. It's not creating. You can chop up food on Shabbos, make yourself a salad as long as you're eating it on Shabbat and it's for your meal on Shabbat. You're not doing it for Saturday night. I can't wait till Shabbos is out. I'm going to make a salad for tomorrow. As long as you don't do that, you're fine. You can chop up. You can, if it's what's called ochel nefesh, it's for food, it's perfectly permissible.
I don't understand why I can't leave my crock pot running.
I didn't say you can't. You mean with your chicken soup?
Yeah.
Because it'll evaporate though. It just doesn't work well, And you want to make sure, by the way, you need to keep it really hot so that it doesn't go bad. Because you don't want it to go bad, obviously, because that's unhealthy. So I'm going to give you guys one or two tricks before the night's...
I have a question. Yeah. Why do you have to reheat your chicken the way in which it was first prepared?
No, you don't have to, but if you...
Like if you bake the chicken, you're supposed to not...
You mean to heat it up, you mean? No, I'm getting to that right now. Any other questions about this? Yeah, Michal.
How is cooking... Like, how are you, if you cook, how does it make you feel like you're in charge of, everything,
Okay, good. So, it's not cooking, it's the manipulation of the physical world. And it's not only about what you and I are feeling. It's about the activities. Those are activities that represent, symbolize, express control. And productivity. And once a week we are trying to not be in control, and once a week we're trying to not be unproductive, but we're trying to pull back from being productive, creative creatures. We're trying to simply be one with the natural world and not manipulate the natural world, and in doing so it humbles us. And in order to have that, we disengage from it completely, and specifically through these 39 activities. I can't guarantee that it's going to always make you feel humbled. It's going to always make you feel emotionally like you're not in control of the world. For God's sakes, Rabbi, all I'm doing is cooking. I'm making a pasta for my, you know, how the heck is that? But it's the activity. And life is in the details. Judaism is all about, not philosophy, Judaism is about activity. You know, the French philosopher, the famous French, Descartes, said, "I think, and therefore I am." He was an epistemologist, and he was trying to give us something to prove we exist. So he says our thoughts and our thinking process demonstrates our existence. And I would say that in Judaism, it's our behaviors. And I would argue also that behavior makes a greater impact on our living than our thinking does. And sometimes, even if we're not conscious or aware that the activities in which we engage are affecting us, trust me, they're affecting us. Perhaps more than what's going on in here, it's what's happening here. And that's why halakha means to walk. The whole Talmud is an analysis of what to do and what not to do. That's Judaism. It's not just what you believe. It's what you do. It's what you don't do. And if one day a week we're super conscious and mindful of not being manipulative and creative, it's going to change us. Yeah.
But just kind of taking a step back, like all these kind of things that people do to keep your food warm on Shabbos,
right.
Like, you know,
I'm going to get to them in one
not
second.
Not that they're like cheating, but is it kind of like undermining the whole point of...
So again, this goes back to what we discussed last week.
You're kind of using even more technology to...
Yeah, so you have to be careful and different. This is the gray area of Judaism, especially in the 21st century, because I can rig my home right now, and so can you, to have all of these things done for us without us doing it. It's not hard. You can have timers on everything. So I mentioned Rav Moshe Feinstein, that was the rabbi with the Siamese twins thing. He was cool with timers having to do with light. That's it. Meaning, because light is such an important thing in a Jewish home on Shabbat, that's why we light candles, he felt that was appropriate to have a light, but nothing else. Other rabbis are like, what do you mean, hot food? Hot food enhances your Shabbat experience. So it's okay to have a timer for hot food. What about, I don't know, you could keep going.
Yeah, as technology progresses, it's going to be almost indistinguishable from not
being able to watch the game and hands off Shabbat.
You could do it.
But at some point, you just have to draw the line.
You have to draw a line because you have to say to yourself, now I do this, and a lot of people might disagree with me. Someone said to me, we were talking about, like, can you study on Shabbos? You're in school. You got a big test. So my kids asked me this, and I went through this when I was in school forever. And I studied the parts, when I was in law school, I think I shared this with you, I studied constitutional law on Shabbos. I didn't study contracts, property, or money things. Because I felt that was against the spirit of Shabbat. And I was just doing, and then you're just preparing. Because you know, and I didn't really like those subjects as much.
Would they be considered malachas?
And I loved, what's that?
Would they be considered malachas?
No, it's not a malacha. This is rabbinic now.
Yeah.
There's no malacha to study.
Like even if you're studying something about your job,
doesn't matter. Right? It's not a malacha.
Yeah,
malacha has to be physically engaging in one of these 39 activities.
Yeah.
You're studying, you're not.
Yeah.
But it's still rabbinically inappropriate,
right,
to study something that has to do with money or that you're just doing it because you have a test. You're not doing it because you get anything out of it for Shabbos. But I got something out of constitutional. I kept taking more courses in it. I loved it, and I felt that it was. I just felt it expanded me as a human being. It did. I feel that way, and I feel going to a museum would be an appropriate thing. Now, does that mean you can break the law and go into a museum, swipe your thing, and no. If you can figure out a way around the other things, being in a museum and seeing art and appreciating the abilities that human beings have to express themselves, I think is a very appropriate thing to do on Shabbos.
So like how the Jewish Museum is free on Shabbos.
Jewish Museum is open and free on Shabbos. I think it's appropriate. You know, my dad always goes to the Met, and you know, you can get in if you have a card, if there's an error. There are ways of doing it if you really want to go. And I don't think it's inappropriate. Other people would say, no, you have to sit around a Shabbos table. I think there are different ways of connecting with God. As long as it doesn't break one of these 39 rules, and it's consistent with the themes of Shabbat, and I think those are. But you got to be careful with technology, because you could say, what do you mean? Here's a great television show. this television show is so meaningful. It's inspiring me, and it's giving me values. You know, what's the show? Schlissel? What is it? I watched a few of it. Schlissel or Schlissel. It's on Netflix now. So because there's some really interesting things. Maybe that can go off on Shabbos. I'll set my timer to watch it. But once you get into that whole, now you're on TV, I wouldn't recommend that. But different rabbis may say different things. Please don't walk out of here and go, the rabbi said it's cool to watch TV on Shabbos. I didn't say that.
That's what you said.
I don't believe that. Did you hear this? So, now, I want to finish up. The rabbis came along, and what was the job of the and who are the rabbis again, by the way? Who are the rabbis? Who are they? The members of the?
Sanhedrin.
Excellent. They came along and they said, okay, the Torah forbids cooking on Shabbos. What's cooking, guys? What is it?
Rendering a raw item edible via heat on Shabbat.
Or B?
Engaging in an activity which increases the characteristic of...
Good. The rabbis had two other concerns. The rabbi's job was what? Maintain the sanctity of Shabbat and make sure they don't mess up on any of the Bible's laws. So for example, the rabbis, we know we're not supposed to write on Shabbat. What did the rabbis come up with as a preventative measure not to write on Shabbat? What was their preventative measure? What's that? Not to what?
Can't pick it up.
You're not supposed to carry around a writing implement on the Sabbath. Why? Because I might just pull it out and inadvertently write something down. So they rendered it muksa, which means don't move it. Right? What did they do for cooking? If you were a sage of the Sanhedrin and you were concerned people might inadvertently cook, they were concerned with two things. Take a look. Number one, they were concerned with coming to stalk the coals. That's a real concern. In what scenario? Turn the page, please. There are two concerns. I wrote rabbinic enactments. Two concerns. Lest one come to stalk the coals and looking though as though it's cooking. Let's do the first one. Let me ask you a question. You turn on the flame before Shabbat, because you wouldn't do that on Shabbos. It's one of the 39 acts of work to put on a flame or increase a flame or even decrease it. And 20 minutes before Shabbos, you're running late. You want to cook a stew for Shabbat. It takes an hour to cook. Right? So I'm not going to do it on Shabbos. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put it up 20 minutes before Shabbos and I'll let it cook on its own. Have you violated anything biblically?
No.
Why not?
Because the heat's already there.
Because the heat was on there, the pot was on there, all that stuff was done before Shabbos. Who said it can't just go on its own on Shabbos? You can't turn it off. It's going to be on for the next 24 hours. Maybe you can ask a non-Jewish friend to turn it off. Fine, we'll talk about that another time. But what's the concern? The rabbis had a concern in that scenario. What would the concern be?
You can't stir it.
You can't stir it. What's the concern?
It might not be boiling yet.
Okay, go ahead. You can't stir it, and therefore the concern is what? Keep
when
going.
You stir it, you move the heat around.
You move the heat around and you cook. You're actually stirring is cooking. Because you're increasing the characteristic availability. You're just moving the process along faster. What about taking a pot, cover, and covering something? What does that do?
Increases the heat.
Increases the heat. You can boil water two times as fast if you cover it. That's considered an act of cooking too. So what were the rabbis concerned? The rabbis were concerned that if you have an open flame and you started the cooking process before Shabbat and you let it cook on its own after Shabbat, you might do what?
Accidentally violate.
Not accident. Look, you might do it on purpose. You might do what though?
Look like you're cooking.
Okay, number one, you'll engage in activities that look like you're cooking, and I'll come back to them and why is that a problem, but even before we get to that, that's the second concern. You might what? The company's coming over and it's cooking on its own.
It's a safety hazard.
What's the concern? You might end up doing what?
Burning the house down.
You don't want to touch it because what happens if you start stirring the thing?
You're cooking.
But the companies, they're knocking on the door already and it's 20 minutes from being cooked. The concern is you're going to increase the flame, you're going to stir it, you're going to put the lid on top, you're going to do what you can to hasten that thing and you're going to cook. That's called the rabbis being concerned. Now I know what you're saying. I'm a disciplined guy. Okay? I know I can't write on Shabbos. Don't worry. I'll put the pen in my pocket and I still won't write. And you know what? I'll put the stove up and I won't stir. I won't cave in to my friends knocking on the door going, that looks really good. When are we going to get to eat it? I will be disciplined. The truth is you might be disciplined. But can any legal system in the world operate like that? You know what? Let's make the speeding limit, according to who? They do it according to the average person. The average person, the rabbis had a concern, they might come to cook on their own. Shema yichata b'gecholim, the Talmud says, lest one come to stalk the coals. In the ancient times, how would you increase the flame? How would you cook faster? You ever do a barbecue? How do you get the barbecue to move quicker?
Move the coals around.
Move the coals around, very good. What would you do today? Put the pot on top. Increase the flame. Stir a bit. The rabbis were concerned that if you have an open flame, right, with nothing to remind you it's the Holy Sabbath. And what else? You know, you mentioned this. It looks as though you're cooking. It does look like you're cooking, but you're really not. Who cares what it looks like? The rabbis were concerned that if we engage in any activities that's too closely resembling the prohibited activity, we will end up in the prohibited activity itself. Is it guaranteed we will? No. Is it a possibility? Yes. And therefore, how do we solve these two rabbinic concerns? How do we allay the rabbinic issues? One thing we do that you'll see in Sabbath observant kosher homes, you'll see what in a kitchen on Shabbos? That allays these two concerns. A blech. Shabbos goy would also work. We'll talk about that another time. I don't want to discuss that. In 2 weeks, we're going to talk about a non-Jewish help on Shabbat. That is a purely rabbinic area. This has got biblical and rabbinic to it, the cooking. The blech. Don't ask me how that it got to... The hot plate or the blech solves these two issues. Why? How?
Because it keeps it warm. It takes warm food that's room temperature or warm and just... slowly warms it, and it's not.
What if you just put a piece? You put a piece of sheet metal on top of your stove, or you have a hot plate. How is it get you out of these two concerns? Number one, does it look like you're cooking? No, because typically people don't cook with a piece of sheet metal on top of their stove, or on a hot plate, which is just to heat up, not to cook. That's A. How does it deal with lest one would come to stalk the coals?
No coals, no fire.
Well, there might be coals in a fire if you just have a piece of sheet metal on top.
Don't touch it.
What does it serve as? A barrier. How?
Because it blocks. It's the burner. And
also,
you put
the sheet metal distributes the heat by itself.
Okay, it may not actually physically block it, but what does it do?
No, but it distributes the heat evenly itself instead of you moving the coals.
Yeah, there's nothing to do with it, though. It does. It does distribute the heat more evenly. But what does it do? What's the point of it?
Sort of.
No, don't get into that yet. You're going to confuse it. What does it do? You started saying it.
It blocks the flame from overcooking.
And what does that do for you? It's a reminder. It's simply a reminder to you that not to increase the flame. It's just a heker, which is a way of, hey, it's Shabbos. That's it. That's all it is. And it gets around the two rabbinic concerns so that you can reheat food on Shabbos. Because remember, as long as you cooked it before Shabbos, you can have it on Shabbos hot unless it's a liquid.
Because your flame already on in your stove, it's already like
the flame is on. Yeah, you got a blech over it. We're only talking about heating previously cooked food items. You want to take a piece of chicken from the fridge that's been cooked from before Shabbat. How do you heat it up? So, if you have the flame on from before Shabbat, what's the concern?
Why can't you turn it on? Like it's just turning a knob, and the flame is
right. Because when you turn the knob, you're allowing more gas, and you're actually creating a flame. And increasing a flame is actually doing the same thing as creating it to begin with. By adding fuel, you're actually creating a flame. It's one of the 39 acts of work, technically. But I'm not even speaking about, I'm going a lower level now. That's biblical. Rabbinically, it's an issue because the rabbis have a concern. You might come to increase the flame even to just heat up your previously cooked piece of chicken because you want to get it hot faster. So as long as you have a blech, it gets you around that. Just want you to see, it's a very logical system. Yeah.
So I had, for Kugel's kitchen, I had a kosher kitchen to do this, so I had to make a blech, and I use a cookie sheet. I didn't know actually how to make a blech. Is there rules?
No. Something that looks like it's a little weird and different that you wouldn't ordinarily cook with. You stick it on top of the flame, you're good to go. Or, get yourself a hot plate. I prefer these. The hot plates are the easiest things, because they help... because nobody cooks on a hot plate. People heat up on a hot plate, and remember, the prohibition is to cook, not to heat up. And, of course, in the case of a liquid, heating up is cooking. Remember? That's the same thing.
Can you get...
Please. Can you what?
Can you get a non-Jew to use the microwave?
I'll talk about non-Jewish help on Shabbat in 2 weeks.
Did the Sanhedrin not trust the Jews? No. Or is it because they just understood human nature?
The latter.
Because, I mean, back then, most Jews didn't have the education, like the education system, right? They were mostly slaves. They didn't have, like, the understanding.
No, the Sanhedrin were way after the enslavement.
Right.
And most Jews were well educated still.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with education. You could be guys. Hang on. This is really important. You can be the most well-educated person in the world, and the company is sitting and waiting for dinner, and the open flame is there, and the chicken is going to take another 30 minutes, and you want to get it done in 10 minutes. That's the concern. Shema yechata begechalim, lest they come and stalk the coals. Could be with the biggest Torah scholar in the world.
It just seems like not. It's just not trusting, and it's because of human nature
It's human nature. I mean, I've been Sabbath observant my whole life. If I carried around a pen on Shabbos and somebody came over me and asked me a question that required a little arithmetic, I might inadvertently. You know what happens on Shabbos? Somebody says to me something, and I go like this, because I'm used to pulling my phone out to get the calculator to do this, do that. Yeah. So if I do this, and the phone is on me on Shabbat, and by the way, if I carry it around, there's nothing biblical going on here. It's just the rabbinic. It's a muksa thing. The rabbis, of course, has nothing to do with education. It has nothing to do with level of observance. It has everything to do with the human condition. 6 days, we are used to living in a certain way. Yeah. Once a week, we don't. Yeah. By the way, when we get to Passover, we're going to have the same stuff. Since all year round we're used to eating chametz, we're used to eating all this stuff, we go crazy on Passover because we believe that inadvertently we could so easily mess up and eat chametz by accident because that's what we consume all year.
Yeah.
It's no different with Shabbat. And it's not because we have a dim vision of human nature. We look down on people. We think people are so sloppy and so careless. But we're a little careless. We're a little sloppy and we're human. It's to err is human. And that's what the rabbis did. And they didn't do this to create problems. They did this to prevent problems. To prevent us from inadvertently violating the Torah. That was their job. There's a verse in the Torah that says, listen to the rabbis, safeguard the law.
So why did, for instance, the rabbis make the law like this, that he had chametz going on with Passover that is forbidden, like it's forbidden for eternity and everything, okay, you know, so... the only answer I have is...
Well, I didn't get the question. What's the question?
How come chametz was on during Passover?
Okay, we could talk about it when we get closer to Passover right now. I'm just giving you the general theme behind the rabbinic laws. It's not to make our lives more complicated. They do, but they're intended to pull things back a little. You know the 18-minute thing? Like you light your candles and then you got that 18-minute thing.
He's about to talk about it, I think.
Oh, you're going
to
do this? Good. Shuki, I'll leave it for Shuki, but why do we need that? Because if we tell people Shabbat is at 8:02, and that's it. I think a lot of people will, 8:02. I know it would mess me up. I need those 18 minutes. I need that like pullback just to ensure that I don't miss, I'm just that kind of personality. It's just who I am.
What's an 18-minute thing?
Shuki's going to explain it. Right? You're not talking about?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Professor
Joseph Chavez. Okay. It's just a safeguard to make sure you don't break Shabbat.
That's it.
All right, guys. This is good. We'll do a little more of the cooking thing. We'll get, you know, but I hope that was helpful.
Yeah. We have work to do.
Yeah, you guys can get lots of homework.